into teams of warriors, gladiators. Battle it out with no champion crowned. There is but one solution.
We're headed for Golden Point.
This, dear listeners, is the Golden Point.
Hello and welcome to season 3 of the Golden Point. We're kicking off a whole new footy year with a brand new format for the Golden Point.
They said we'd never make it.
Yeah, I know.
They said it was going to die after one season. Look at us now.
You know what they say? They say never say never. And we're back and we're here again. And as I said, brand new format. But first of all, JC, how is the off season? How's the 2018 treating you?
Yeah, it's going well. I'm glad that summer's over. It means footy's back. And it also means the heat is gone, hopefully. Maybe we'll linger for a little while, but good riddance to you, heat. I hate the summer.
Yeah,
looking forward to the footy. I think it's going to be a good year. Quite a few changes, some big lineup changes in the team. So I think that's going to be good. And I'm looking forward to the new format of the Golden Point.
It's quite a carousel now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like, it's pretty insane. Particularly with like the Panthers. Being a Panthers fan, I always notice it. But it's like, whatever team we have at the end of 2017 won't be the team at the start of 2018.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the end of every season.
And it's pretty much the same for most clubs, especially this year. I think some real big name changes. You know, obviously Kronk and Tedesco, two huge ones going to the Roosters. Foran, Woods going to the Dogs. Panthers losing Moylan, Cartwright. you know, Sharks have picked up a few in obviously Moylan and Dugan. It's all over. There's players just going around everywhere. Jack Bird to the Sharks, to the Broncos.
Yeah, crazy. Absolutely insane.
So, it's going to be great to see, I guess, how all the new combinations go. Obviously, got a few players coming back from long-term injuries too. You got Matt Scott, Greg Inglis.
So many talking points. But despite there being so many talking points, we're moving away from talking
We've gotten rid of talking points.
We kind of realised after 2 years that we're not experts of rugby league.
Oh, no, we are experts of rugby league. It's just that there's a lot of experts of rugby league out there. So you kind of get lost in the sea of experts, I think.
So now we're becoming what's called rugby league historians.
Mm. We've given ourselves the title of historians.
Exactly.
We're gurus. We're rugby league history gurus.
David Middleton knows nothing.
Thanks to Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Well, he's a stats guru.
Yeah,
we're history gurus.
Good point, yeah. Very different.
Yeah.
So essentially, the new format we have is where one of us each week, alternating weeks, will be going through a story or a feature of rugby league from the past and just taking the other one through it, seeing what they think about it. Hopefully you guys learn something, we learn something. You know, the one I've done for this week, I've learned a lot, which is really good. I actually really enjoyed researching it, and I think it's something that a few people think they know a lot about, but they don't actually know a lot about it.
Yeah.
So,
well, I don't know what it is yet, but...
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited.
Exactly.
I'm excited to learn.
And that's the other feature, you know, is that the other person who will be hearing the story won't know that. So hopefully the reactions we get will be real and, like, you know, live, recorded, and then put on a podcast for later listening.
I've cleared some space in my rugby league brain for this new info. I got rid of the Bulldogs 2017 season. I thought I didn't need that anymore, so I threw that in the recycle bin, and I've cleared some space for whatever you got for me tonight.
It's a good call, because we are talking about the Bulldogs 2017 season. All right, so the topic I have chosen, drum roll for the inaugural topic, look at that. The 8 Immortals of Rugby League.
Okay.
So, thought it was a good one to pick, because the NRL has come out and said that they're going to be announcing the 9th Immortal this year at some point. So I thought everyone should know a little bit about who the other 8 guys are that are currently holding that title.
Yep.
So to give you a bit of a history of what the 8 Immortals are, or the Immortals Award, created back in 1981 by Rugby League Week magazine. There are 8 Immortals, as I said, and the 9th Immortal will be named this year. So the judges have agreed that whatever they judge is only on player performance on field. So we're not talking about, you know, what they do off-field or anything like that. So you can be one of the bad boys of rugby league and still get there, potentially.
Matt Lodge is a future immortal.
I think Wayne Bennett thinks so, anyway.
Yeah.
To give you a rundown of some of the people that have helped judge this award over past times, we've got Wayne Bennett, Ray Warren, John Grant, David Middleton, Ray Hadley, and Phil Rothfield are just a few examples of names that popped out to me that were part of that list. What do you think about
that? I wonder if in the future they're going to ask us to join that.
I hope so. You know,
I mean, we're coming historians. Hmm. We're giving ourselves the title of historians. We're obviously going to learn a lot this season.
And in about 30 minutes' time, we're going to be experts on this topic as well. You know,
but so I guess so is everyone that listens to this podcast. So it might be it might be quite a large panel for next time around. Yeah, look, that's fine. That's what was the question? Sorry.
What do you think about the previous judges?
Yeah, well, I mean, some great names in there. Yeah. And I agree with everyone that's been picked so far. Probably a few that are missing, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But yeah, the probably the most contentious part is judging it on field performances, not off field. It's a hard call to make because obviously it's a few players out there that have had troubled pass off the field that have been fantastic players on the field. Mm. But yeah, we'll just have to go with what they have decided.
Absolutely. So I'll start us off. So back in 1981, when they first announced the Immortals, they named four players for that initial awards. I don't know how it worked, really, if it was like a ceremony or whatever. But so the first one that I've listed here was Clive Churchill.
Yep.
I think that's a name you're going to recognise. Yeah.
He has a medal named after him. That's or is he named after the medal?
That's a good point. We don't know which came first. No one.
Chicken or the egg.
Yeah, I'll have to look up Wikipedia for that one, just to make sure.
I reckon the medal came first and he got named after it.
It makes sense, right?
It makes a lot more sense, yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. So to give you a bit of a rundown of Clive Churchill, his season, or his career, was mainly played at fullback. The little guy, starting back in 1946, so that's sort of like just after that World War II.
Pre-war, yeah.
Yeah, time, which I think for all sports and just for Australia in general, that was a very sort of like tumultuous time where it was a bit crazy about what was going on. So it'd be a bit of a weird time to be a professional sports star because you'd imagine a lot of people have different things on their mind.
This might be a bad thing to say, but no, I won't say it.
I feel like you need to say it.
I'll say it in a less offensive way.
Okay.
I wonder how many stars were lost through those world wars.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously, maybe players, and this is taking absolutely nothing away from Clive Churchill or any of the players that played post-war. But I do wonder how many, because obviously a lot of young Australian men were lost, and New Zealand men, not that many of them played in the rugby league back then, were lost in that war. So I do wonder how many potential future immortals were lost during the war.
Yeah, it's a really good point, and it's actually been one of the contentious points of the Immortals I was reading about, was that they were saying it's only post-war players that are part of that. You know, there's no one pre-war. Okay. And obviously, rugby league's been around for 50 years before Clive Churchill. So it's like all of those players sort of aren't given this almost like Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah.
What was their reasoning behind that?
There wasn't really one. I guess. Like, I mean, part of it, I mean, one of the things they agreed on, the first guys, was it had to be someone that had seen play in real life.
Okay, sure.
So it'd be hard. Then you need, like, you know, Marty McFly to come back and help you out with that one. But yeah, so unfortunately, yeah, no one pre-war. Who knows? Maybe they'll come up with a bit of a list.
An interesting one because obviously there is footage. Like there's footage of pre-war, so it's not that they can't watch it. But yeah, I guess they can't just base it off stats because they can be a bit deceiving sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. So continuing on with Clive Churchill, he played the majority of his games with South Sydney, 157 games. In that, he scored 193 points. Do you know how many tries he scored?
You'd imagine it would be a lot.
Yeah, like but a lot of footage of him scoring tries. But
yeah, but I'm just trying to think, do we always see the same footage?
That's a good question.
Is it the same try from different angles? I'll have a stab and say, look, let's go midway. Let's say 50.
All right, good guess. 13.
13 tries.
13 tries, which is just insanely low for what I would have thought.
So out of 140 odd games?
157.
Yeah,
which
geez.
For a fullback is ridiculous. Like, that's insane. Yeah. I don't know what like league was like back then, to be honest.
Well, yeah. I get that maybe there was. I don't know. I'm not David Middleton. I'm not a stats guru. I'm a history guru. But maybe there weren't as many tries scored back then. Obviously, field goals were worth more. So I'm guessing there was a fair few more of those kicked.
Yeah, and I guess I should sort of, I guess, preface this by saying that obviously 50 years ago, I'm getting a lot of these stats from Wikipedia, I've got to be honest, so I guess the accuracy of the information, while I'd love for it to be correct, may be incorrect. Maybe someone left a zero off when they were typing it in. But speaking of zeros, he played 37 games for Australia, scored zero tries.
Wow.
Which,
I mean, there has to be something there. There has to be a reason.
Yeah. Maybe just pass the ball every time we go in there. Most unselfish player in rugby league would like call over like the big front row and go, "Hey, hey, mate, your turn."
I'd love to compare it with players of a similar era and see how that matches up. But yeah, because maybe there's one as many tries scored.
Yeah, absolutely. He also played 27 games for New South Wales, which is like massive amounts of rec games there, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's not overall surprising because his name was obviously held in high regard whenever it's talked about in rugby league circles.
A couple of other real accomplishments for him were 24 captain, he captained Australia, 24 times in his time there. He's also the captain of Australia for the first ever Rugby League World Cup back in 1954.
Well, did anyone care about it then?
I don't think so. Yeah,
so nothing's
like,
changed.
Yeah, I feel like that's just been the thing where no one really cared. I noticed they used to play the Ashes, is what they called it, but I think that was just to try to make people care. And people still just didn't care about international rugby league, unfortunately.
Yeah.
5 premierships as a player, 3 as a coach, and obviously the grand final man of the match namesake. So it's pretty impressive, amazing career.
So what was the grand final man of the match called before he came along?
I don't know. I don't think I gave it out. I was like, "You're all winners," and just left it at that. But
we don't have a name for it, so we can't give it out. Or if it was named something, and they changed it, they take someone's name off the medal? Because that'd be pretty offensive. Like, you know, if John Smith, it was the John Smith medal, and then someone comes along, Clive Churchill comes along, going, "You know what? I think he's a little bit better, so let's change it." You don't feel too good if you're John Smith, do you?
To be fair, if it was called the John Smith medal, I'm glad they changed it, because that is just horrendous.
I mean, names were much simpler back in the day.
I had a friend in high school named John Smith, so, I mean, people are actually called that.
Chances are that most people would have a friend. It's the most common name, at least in the Western world, so.
Yeah, crazy.
Most people probably know a John Smith.
Yeah.
I knew a John, but not a John. I think we're getting off topic.
All right. Next immortal, Bob Fulton. Again, 1981 class. 5'8 in the centre. Manly played all his games for Manly. 219 games in total.
Fantastic player, terrible selector.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's... Unfortunately, he's been a little bit ruined for that reason. And just like he's involved in Manly and stuff like that. Not really likes Manly.
No.
But 129 tries in his career. Played a bit for Warrington. Played a bit for East as well. Also had a pretty big coaching career with Manly and East over his time. 35 games for Australia and 16 for New South Wales. Again, great.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest thing I noticed for him was that he was the youngest ever captain in the grand final at the age of just 20.
Wow.
Could you imagine that? Like,
yeah.
When I was 20 years old, I could barely string a sentence together.
People used to have kids at 15, though.
That's a good point, yeah.
I mean, people are having kids at like 45 now. So yeah. Times have changed. I mean, you own your own house at 12. You started working at 6. I mean, when he was 20, that was probably like that was probably like close to retirement age.
Yeah, you know what? No longer a good record, you know? I actually removed that.
Yeah.
Absolutely crap. Like, Matt Moylan was captain when he was like 12, so, you know,
And what a fantastic captain he was.
Exactly, yeah. All right. He also won 3 premierships as a player with Manly, and he's coached Manly at East as well.
I talked about quite highly as well. I think most people, well, a lot of people for a long time called him the greatest player of all time. Then obviously you had your Wally Lewis and Darren Lockyer's and Andrew Johns and Jonathan Thurston's come along. But I think for a long, long time, a lot of people did consider him the best of the best.
Yeah.
So obviously very deserving of an immortal tag.
Definitely. I'll point out as well his career span from 1965 to 1979, so a bit later than Clive, but yeah, still obviously a big time for rugby league.
Yep.
So the next player we'll move on to, you'll know the name Gaznia, obviously not Mark, but Reg, his uncle, who was a centre, played 125 games for St. George. How many tries do you reckon he scored?
Oh, a lot.
Yep, that's a good answer.
100 plus.
Yep. Correct. You got it spot on. 100 plus. No, 127 in total, which is just amazing. So more than a try a game, which is just, absolutely insane.
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen anyone in the modern era doing
that. Brett Morris, he was going pretty close for a while.
He was.
And someone else. Who else is that try-scoring freak? Vunivalu, he's going pretty good. I think Blacklock for a long time, he was going pretty close.
I think Haynes started off really well as well, but obviously has dropped off in the recent years. But,
his NFL stats weren't quite the same.
Almost a touchdown.
Yeah.
But he was a one club player, which you always like to see with St. George, and he was there during those glory times for them.
Yeah.
Won 6 premierships as a player, which is
crazy, isn't it?
Absolutely insane.
I wonder if it loses its gloss after 4 or 5.
You feel like on like when they finally lost, they just like, what do you mean? Like, what? Like,
thank God. We don't have to go to another parade in the city.
I feel like I'd get up on the stage and try and take the trophy away. And they'd be like, no. Like, you lost.
Our trophy. Kind of be like in Zoolander when he's at the award ceremony and they're naming male model of the year or something, and he just automatically gets up, even though Hansel gets it. Spoiler alert, sorry, but I should have watched it 17 years ago.
Yeah.
I imagine it's kind of like that. You know, grand final day after the match, they just automatically go up and accept it from the Queen if she was still doing it then. Was she ever doing it? Maybe once. She did it once.
I'm not sure. I didn't even know she did it even once.
Well, maybe I'm thinking of the Prime Minister. I can't imagine the Queen coming out.
She'd be like, yes, rugby.
Maybe she just happened to be here for 1 year. Maybe it was the World Cup or something.
She was like popping by. She was like close to the stadium. She's like, oh, sure, whatever.
It could have just been someone. It could have just been an old lady. They all kind of look the same, let's be fair. White old ladies.
Fair enough. So he played 16 games for New South Wales, scoring 15 tries. Another amazing record. 39 games for Australia with 28 tries, and he also captained Australia 8 times. So he's been described as the best centre ever to play the game by his past teammates and opponents. And when he retired, Bill Buckley, who was the ARL chairman at the time, said, in his day, he was the greatest rugby league player I've ever seen. Gaznia had an amazing change of pace and great anticipation. He was particularly unselfish. He was without peer. Which I think is a lovely quote. You know, I think if someone said that about me, I'd have a tear in my eye.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's pretty offensive to everyone else that was playing, but yeah, it's like to say he had no peer. Like, I get it. I get the sentiment, but, you know, come on.
Maybe he should be a better player. he was named at centre in the team of the century as well. Big Mal Meninga was the opposite centre for him.
Hmm.
Next one for 1981, the last 1981 immortal was Johnny Raber. Lock forward, the only forward part of this group so far, lock forward. His career spanning from 1957 to 1974. So majority games, again, with St. George, 185 games, 47 tries over that time, which is good for a lock, you know.
Yeah, oh, very good. Steve Menzies-like.
Yeah, absolutely. Any thoughts on Johnny Raper?
Oh, well, it makes sense that there's another Dragons player in there. Obviously, they had, you know, as you mentioned, the glory run, the 11 premierships in a row. So there's got to be a couple of standouts in there. There's obviously a name that's been popping up lately, which I'm sure we'll touch on, but another player / coach that maybe should be in there. But again, I've obviously never wasn't allowed to witness him playing, but you hear fantastic things. You see the vision, and he looks like he had that you know, elusive pace, just that well, not elusive, but you know, that blistering pace that you just. Sorry, I'm still talking about Gaznia.
Yeah, Gaz, yeah.
I'm getting my Dragons players mixed up. No, I mean, Ray Perry, obviously one of those players that, yeah, you hear all the experts from a bygone era talk about and say that great player to watch, blah, blah, but I don't have a personal view on him because I didn't watch him play.
That's the thing, right? I mean, the Raper name for me was always his, I think, son, Stuart Raper, was it? The former Sharks coach.
Was that his son?
Yeah, I don't know if it was his son or nephew or something like that, but yeah. I mean, growing up, that's the Raper name I knew, and then I found out more about Johnny during this research, really. But I always knew he was an immortal, but just didn't know much about his career.
Yeah.
To go into his career, amazing representative career with 39 games for Australia and 24 for New South Wales. And he, from what I was reading, he was really he was a lock forward during that unlimited tackle era. So he was really just tackle.
Just a machine.
Like, you know, yeah, unstoppable, you know, like the Nathan Hindmarsh, but without all the flops, you know. It's,
hopefully less butt cracks.
You'd imagine so, but yeah, who knows.
There's definitely a joke in there with the last name and butt cracks. Oh. And we won't touch on it because we're a kid-friendly podcast.
Better than that, yeah.
But people can put two and two together. The adults in the room can join those two, form a joke in your head, laugh, but absolutely, we won't directly go there.
No, we won't talk about anything with rapers and butt cracks, all right? So we'll move on from there. So we'll move on to the next batch that were put into the Immortals group. This is all the way into 1999, so 18 years after. 18 years, wow. Crazy.
Like, that's a whole adult.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, what was Rugby League Week doing?
You could be an adult in 1999 and not have had an immortal named in your whole life.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's actually insane.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the next one is Graham Langlands, a fullback in the centre. Another St. George guy, 1963 to 1976 with St. George. 33 games for New South Wales and 45 for Australia.
Wow. Which,
again, is just insane.
Again, do you just get sick of it? Your name's called, oh God, I'm going to go again. Or is it, you know, do you just, do you find that passion, that that spirit to play in the Australian jersey throughout all those games.
Yeah, I'd imagine it'd be a lot of fun. You know, like you'd be over there partying quite a bit and sort of doing everything you want to do. I think like by the time you're sort of probably around like the 20 to 30 matches, you'd be really in party mode, and by the time you reach to about 40, you'd be more of that senior player that would just be like, I'm too good for that, you know?
Mm.
Get your head in straight. And yeah. Come on. I'm a leader of this team now.
Yes.
Yeah.
No one wants to be.
No.
Yeah. You don't want to be the buzzkill of the group.
Definitely. Yeah. But yeah, so a couple hundred games in the NRL. He also was the top point scorer for the Dragons for 10 seasons in a row.
10 seasons in a row.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, like, yeah, it's insane, really. And he was the last Australian player to captain and coach his country, which... Mm. Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty long era. So
yeah.
It's pretty crazy they went away from that. But
yeah.
I actually like the idea of a captain and coach as well, I will say.
Yeah, probably a bit too much to take on these days.
Yeah.
You know, because being a player is a full-time job in itself.
But I feel like Cam Smith basically takes on that role with a lot, I mean, with a lot of his teams he's in. Obviously, like, Craig Bellamy is an amazing coach. But it's like Cam Smith is clearly just... Basically a captain, really.
Yeah. Well, he's a captain.
Yeah.
But,
sorry, I'm in a coach.
But, you know, there has to be just so much... if anyone has watched Friday Night Lights, like, you look at what Coach Taylor goes through. You can't do that and play in the game and train and all that. I think it's, you know, it's rugby league wasn't so much a full-time job back in these days. So it was a lot easier to do both things. A lot of players... It was a working class game. They still had a job outside of rugby league. They were probably only training a couple of days a week and things like that. So probably a lot easier. These days, I can't imagine anyone doing it. The players complain about fatigue enough, you know, that they have to play rep and 24 games in 26 rounds. Can't imagine them having a coaching role as well. Plus, do they get paid for both?
You'd hope so, right?
Instead of going to the salary cap?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
You know.
Maybe that'd be a way to get around it. It's like, oh yeah, cool. All right, we'll pay you like $1 million a season to be the coach, and then you'll get like $1,000 for playing. It's like,
I'm sure Melbourne's tried.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like Cameron Smith's probably like the assistant coach or something like that. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, no, of course.
And ref. that's three pretty big hats to put on.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And apparently he's an accountant in his time off as well. So
and he gets criticised so much, you know. It's like this guy is taking on more than any of us can handle.
What I question, if he is really an accountant, like they say, where was he during this whole salary cap scandal? Why was the blame not put on him?
I'm going to say that he's not actually an accountant, but he was doing the books. And he didn't know what he was doing, you know.
He was part of it.
He like made a joke, hey, I'm the accountant. And everyone was like, okay, mate, we need to do the books. And he's too embarrassed to pull out of it. Went along.
We've all been there.
Carried the one where he shouldn't have, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, another troll-friendly joke from JC.
If you didn't say it, they wouldn't have even tried to pick up on it.
That's a good point.
Subtlety is key. Subtlety? Subtlety.
Let's go with subtlety.
Yeah.
We'll move on to the next immortal. The King, the Emperor of Lang Park, Wally Lewis. So two people in 1999, so Graham Langlands and Wally Lewis.
Yep.
5'8 and a lock, mainly a 5'8 is what we're known for. Probably the one that I was most surprised with when I was researching, because I thought I knew a lot about Wally Lewis, but in fact I knew nothing about Wally Lewis.
Yeah.
Just because, like, the majority of his career was played with Fortitude Valley, which I didn't really even realise was actually a club.
All we know is, as Bris Vegas, you go into the Valley and seedy nightclubs and music venues.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, really, like, his first great career wasn't that fantastic. He played 301 games all up, which is amazing. And that's including, like, the Brisbane Rugby League stuff and the NRL stuff and all that.
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing. I mean, in our generation, which, you know, we obviously started watching late 90s, early 2000s, and the Brisbane Rugby League wasn't around then. You know, it already kind of, it obviously had diminished from what it was. It was a powerhouse as well back in the day. So there was just as much prestige playing in the Brisbane comp as there was the New South Wales comp. So it wasn't, I wouldn't say, like, obviously, you know, he didn't have a long New South Wales Rugby League first grade career, but he had a long career. There's no doubt about that at a high level.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the thing I found most interesting about his first grade career was that after his 135 games with Fortitude Valley, Wakefield Trinity over in England offered him a contract.
Yeah.
And he didn't really want to do it.
Yeah.
And they sort of said, oh, name your price. And he said, oh, £30,000, which was a lot of money back in like 83. And he didn't realise they were a very rich club. And they said, sure.
It was like not? Five houses in Sydney back then.
But, I mean, interesting. Okay, he became the highest paid player in the Super League for that one season. He only played 10 games as well, which is nuts.
Yeah.
But that actually equated to about $160,000 if you're, like, according to Wikipedia, for today's money, it would be about close to about $200,000 a season.
Okay.
Which is insane. Like, that was the highest paid contract back then. Yeah. Now you're seeing, like, $1.5 million contracts and crazy stuff like that. Like, just, like, ridiculously high contracts.
I guess you have to figure there wasn't as much money in the game, though.
Yeah, I know, true. Yeah,
it's like saying, you know, maybe 15 years ago in the National Soccer League, the highest contract was X amount, but now it's X amount. There's a lot more money in Australian soccer / football now than there was in the 90s or whatnot. Yeah. So, so it's changed. It's obviously...
I guess, like, TV being more prevalent and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So many stations and just the money they make from television is just insane.
Yeah. But,
yeah. All right, so played 38 games for Queensland all up with 8 Man of the Match awards. Started captaining Queensland at the age of 21. Jeez. After Arthur Beetson, who was the captain and coach, pulled out with injury. So he was awarded the inaugural Golden Point Award.
I don't remember giving him that. I want a recount.
He definitely wouldn't have got it if it was the Golden Point Award.
No.
Yeah, so he got the Golden Point, the Golden Boot Award. Jesus. Having a shocker.
If you don't remember what the name of the podcast is, you will now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So Golden Boot Award. He got the first one ever of that. I think inaugural was throwing off a bit there. And
it's a tricky word.
There's a lot.
We all have trouble. It's okay.
Yeah, thank you. And he was, like, you know, awarded obviously the best international player of 1984, which is the first time that was ever awarded.
Yep.
He became the first Queenslander since Tom Gorman back in 1929 to 1930 to be named as captain for the Kangaroos tour, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. And so, and this is obviously all when he's still playing in the Brisbane competition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Prior to his Brisbane Broncos days.
So. Yeah. So Broncos obviously came into the comp in 1988 and that's when he went over there. But yeah, he was named, like, I mean, Arthur Beetson, when talking about him, said that, you know, he's the greatest player he's ever seen at representative level. And, I mean, you'd have to agree that, you know, he's had an amazing representative career. And I think that's what people know for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people say that he always went to that extra level, that next level when he put on the Queensland jersey or the Australian jersey. But I think especially the Queensland jersey. And you only have to look back at the highlights to see some of the stuff he did. He kind of played out of his skin. I'm glad I didn't see too much of him play because I think it would have sucked.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. The videos of him, like, just dumbing to no one and things like that, I love those videos. They're so funny. Like, they're just
like, it's like schoolyard football.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't see dummies like that anymore.
No, you really don't. So we'll move on to the 2000s. 2003, Arthur Beetson was the next immortal named, the first prop and second rower to be named out of this list. Obviously, he had a pretty amazing career as well, 233 first grade games all up. Majority of those with East between 1971 and 1978. And just a massive guy with just a ton of skill. I've heard like Greg Inglis be his main, like, modern day comparison.
Yeah,
I could definitely see that. But yeah, he was captain of East during 1974 and 1975 when they won back to back premierships. Had 17 games in New South Wales and surprisingly only 3 games to Queensland, despite being known as, like, this Queensland hero.
Yeah.
Because he came into when State of Origin commenced back in 1980. So. Pretty amazing, like, what he did for Queensland, obviously getting that concept off the ground.
Yeah, well, I'd like to thank him for what he did for New South Wales for those years.
17 games, a true hero.
Very appreciative of that.
It's funny that his comparison is Greg Inglis, and Greg Inglis should be playing for New South Wales as well, but that's probably a touchy subject.
Yeah, don't go there.
Yeah.
Although, there can't be too many Queensland listeners to this podcast that are still listening to this that podcast, I should say.
Yeah, God.
Although, we've had some... Queensland legends of the show, Neville Costigan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Andrew McCulloch. Oh, yeah. David Shillington.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. The first ever.
Martin Lang.
Oh, I forgot about Martin Lang. He was fantastic.
Mm.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah. Just to touch on our own history.
29 games for Australia all up, and a few of his accolades he's been given over the time. He was the first Aboriginal player to overcaptain Australia back in 1973. It's the 1975 New South Wales Sports Star of the Year. Thank you again for the Queensland great. He was named in the Australian Rugby League's top 100 greatest players. Again, prop forward in the team of the century, prop forward for the Queensland team of the century, prop forward for the Indigenous team of the century.
Wow.
And he's obviously won, I think, 3 premierships of the East during his career.
Impressive stuff.
Yeah. And we've got one final immortal to name, and that is Andrew Johns. So Andrew Johns is obviously the one that everyone will know. It's the name that you'll hear, and you'll be like, oh yeah, I know Andrew Johns. He's on Friday Night Footy doing all the broadcast stuff. A few of you would know him as a player as well. I'm assuming a lot of you. But yeah, so he's the most recent immortal to be named. He was named in 2012, so very recent. Again, a bit of a gap between the last group that was named. So and a sole one as well. So all the others have been like sort of double. Actually, Arthur Beetson was by himself as well. But either way, 2003 to 2012, so a decent gap there. 9 years between them. Joey being named. Joey's probably the most controversial one, just for a couple of reasons. Not because of his play on the field, he was an amazing player, but just because of the fact he's admitted to using like illicit drugs during his career, and he's suffered from a few mental health issues that is the reason why he was using those. And a few people have sort of become a bit outspoken about that, saying he shouldn't have been named as an immortal. But yeah, still got that honour, which is great for him. But what do you think about that, about the off-field rule, I guess is what I'd call it, that you don't consider what they're like off the field, it's all about on the field.
Yeah, I mean, he's the one that makes it as hard. But I think they could have... I think they did themselves a disservice by naming him an immortal at that point. I think they could have prolonged it for another 10 or so years, possibly. There's plenty of players prior to him that could have been named, I think. Sturlow's one that gets thrown up a lot. I guess Lockyer retired after him. But there's definitely a few around. Mal Meninga, he's not an immortal yet. No, we didn't list him. Another one that gets thrown up. So there's definitely a few players that have played not long before him, or you know, it was still playing while he was playing, that could have gotten named, and they could have pushed that decision back a bit more, and made the next group of judges have to deal with that. But yeah, it's a hard one, because obviously he's very deserving for his deeds on the field. He's one of the best of all time, if not the best of all time. Many people do regard him as the best of all time, so he has to be an immortal. But obviously, yeah, it gets a bit cloudy if you do bring in off-field stuff to it. So I understand why they left that off.
I mean, in terms of off-field indiscretion, I don't think that's one of the worst ones. I think that, you know, someone using drugs throughout their career, not great, but also not as though it's, you know, something like what Matt Lodge has been accused of, or, you know, a few other guys that have been in prison previously and things like that.
It was a big blight on the game, though, I think. For him to say throughout his whole career he was doing drugs and dodging drug testers, it kind of made everyone stand up and think, oh, okay, so this is obviously very prevalent in the game.
Yeah.
You know, and we saw Kevin Proctor and Bromwich last year, obviously, you know, got done with cocaine, buying cocaine. You had Kenny Dowell had it on him. So it's still prevalent in the game. And I think that's the worst thing that came from it, is it really opened everyone's eyes. Well, maybe that's not the worst thing. Maybe that's a good thing that it did open everyone's eyes to it. But it just definitely made you question what you don't know that goes on behind the scenes.
Definitely.
And it makes you question what the Knights, possibly, you know, New South Wales Rugby League, Australia and the NRL hid for a long time. Did they hide negative or positive drug tests from Andrew Johns because of the player he was? Like, it makes you question a lot of those things.
I always remember in high school having like this crazy substitute teacher who was just absolutely insane. But he was always like, oh, yeah, Joey hurt his neck, and then like started holding his neck while doing like snorting coke. And he's like, that's what happened.
When it was right. Now, you did go to a public school, so I just need to clear something up here. You said while snorting coke. Was he actually snorting coke, or was he doing the action of snorting coke?
He was doing the action of snorting coke. So he was like, you know, like while he's leaning down to do a line over, he like, that's how he hurt his neck, and that's the reason why he had to retire. It was like the NRL just covering up, saying, look, mate, you need to retire, we can't have you anymore.
Just need to clear that up, because you did say while he was doing coke. And, you know, I don't know what goes on in public schools. I'm not privy to that information, I'm sorry.
This teacher was later fired for hitting a student. Just want to point that one out. But,
which, again, doesn't surprise me based on the school you went to.
All right. So, yeah. So, Andrew Johns, let's talk a little bit about on-the-field stuff, considering that's the reason why he was selected. One NRL club, Newcastle Knights, which is why he's the heart and soul of that team. Everyone, when they say Newcastle Knights, knows Andrew Johns. 249 games for them. It's kicked a lot of goals. 2,176 points in total, which is massive. Had 3 games for the Warrington Wolves while he was over there, 23 games for New South Wales, and 24 for Australia.
Not as many rep games as you'd imagine.
Yeah, compared to the other guys as well. Yeah,
but he went through a phase in his career where him and Breck Morley for a long time were battling it out for the 7 jersey. And Joey actually got named at hooker for a few games in New South Wales, on the bench a couple of times, I think. Plus he had, early in his career, he had guys like Alfie Langer and Ricky Stewart battling it out for the Australian jersey. So lots of competition, but it is surprising for someone you consider, or a lot of people would consider, the greatest or one of the greatest of all time, that he didn't hit the 30 mark with either Australia or New South Wales. Obviously, injuries came into that as well.
Definitely.
It's benders.
Injuries, the old, oh, my neck. Like when you compare him to Wally Lewis, for example, who's known just for his rep career, really, they're almost like polar opposites in many ways. But not that Joey didn't have a fantastic career in New South Wales or Australia, for that matter. But two premierships for the Knights. One was the Clive Churchill Medal when they're back in 2001 as well.
Yeah.
In 2002 as well, he was awarded the captaincy of both New South Wales and Australia, and he was was the player of the series against Great Britain as well, which was another big accomplishment of his. Dally M Player of the Year 3 times in his career, which at the time was a record, has now been surpassed by Jonathan Thurston, a future immortal. I think we can all agree on.
Yeah.
And he also held the title for the most points ever scored by a player for, again, a short period of time until Hazem Al-Masri took over.
Another future immortal.
But yeah, so Joey finished with 2,176 points. Hazem finished his career with 2,418. So unless Joey has a miraculous comeback, he will always be third behind Hazem and Cameron Smith on that ladder. And
well, he might be fourth. Well.
Yeah.
Behind him, actually.
Joey, I guess, again, just someone that a lot of people consider to be one of the best players ever to play the game. You know, he's got that same, very similar resume to the other guys in the sense of, you know, being a captain of his country, of his state, playing a lot of games for them, winning series, winning premierships, all that sort of stuff that you really want to see with a player that's named an immortal.
Yeah, there's definitely a pattern there, isn't there? I mean, you're not going to be a name an immortal without a significant amount of rep jerseys. The captaincy definitely helps out too.
Definitely, absolutely. I mean, like, looking at all these guys, I think something else that they have in common is they all often coached after their careers, because obviously they're all just, like, amazing people, like, brains of the game.
Yep.
Joey hasn't really done that yet. He's done a bit for country, I think, but hasn't coached at NRL level or, like, a state level yet. I'm sure he will at some point, or at least...
I'm not sure he will.
Yeah.
I don't think he will, to be honest with you. I don't think he has the mentality for it. I don't know if he necessarily has... This is going to sound offensive, but the brains for it necessarily. I think he has the football knowledge. I don't know if he's necessarily that good at passing it on, because I think you kind of have to look at his record as assistant coach and halves coach at a lot of teams. I don't think it's that great, to be honest with you. Mm. He was the New South Wales halves coach. I'm not sure about assistant coach, but he was the New South Wales, I think, halves coach for a while. And we know how they've gone, don't we?
Tamana Tahu can give you a good story about that. But a lot of them as well have moved into, like, the broadcast area of the game, or, like, Bob Fulton being a selector at times and all that sort of stuff like that. They've all, after their playing career, lived rugby league still.
Oh, absolutely.
They're all, like, their careers continue.
But it just shows you, because you're a great rugby league player, doesn't mean you'll be a great commentator.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Andrew Johns. Yep. Wally Lewis. And it doesn't mean you'll be a great selector, Bob Fulton.
If anything, it's like that their reputation gets them in that position, but maybe they're not the most qualified to be there.
Potentially,
It's pretty crazy. But anyway, as I mentioned at the start of the podcast, we're looking for the ninth immortal this year. The point is, obviously. The NRL, who's just recently purchased the rights to the immortal voting after Rugby League Week closed down. So now they own the IP for that, and they're looking at announcing that later this year. Not sure exactly when.
Have they said it will only be one?
No, actually, that's a good point. They have said the ninth immortal, but you think they could slip a couple in there? Who knows?
Yeah.
But
maybe they will just go one for a little while, though.
As long, I guess so. But yeah, anyway, Fox Sports has shortlisted 5 candidates that they thought would be fitting, which I definitely agree with. Out of these 5, Mal Meninga, Norm Proven, Darren Lockyer, Ron Coote, and Brad Fittler.
Yep.
Is anyone out of that list in particular standing out to you?
Yeah, Norm Proven. I mean, he has to be, I think. Just, you know, you have to base... If you're basing on accolades, I feel like it has to be Norm Proven. As a player and a coach, there's not many people that come close to matching his accolades. So, for me, we've already got a couple of Dragons guys from that... era. What would you call it? glorious era. Yeah, the dynasty. So why not Norm Proby? He did as a player and a coach during that time. So I think he's the key. The younger guys or the more recently retired guys, you can keep pushing them back. They don't have to be immortals just because they've finished up in the last 10 or 15 years. Let's get the guys from decades ago that should have been named as immortal and get them in there, I think.
Let's avoid giving someone like Freddie the opportunity to turn around to Joey when Joey says, I'm an immortal, to turn around and say, so am I. Like, yeah. You know, it's like, let's let them sort of almost essentially retire from rugby league at that point.
Yeah. I mean, you've got guys like we did it a minute ago saying JT future immortal. I mean, yeah. That's fine. That's well and good. But they retire and the next day everyone's questioning, oh, how long till they're an immortal? And it shouldn't be like that. It should be let's work out the past first and then maybe we'll get to a time where a year or two after they've retired they'll start to enter immortality.
Yeah, so that was my next question for you. Now we're sort of at the business end of the podcast. What who is currently playing do you see as a future immortal?
JT's the obvious one. I think Cam Smith will get one. I'm not a big Cam Smith fan, but I have no doubt he'll probably get named as an immortal at one point. I'm trying to think of some younger guys that maybe aren't there yet, but day. Yeah, well, he's got 20 years left in his career, young Matt Moylan.
I saw someone mention Nathan Cleary as the next immortal.
I mean,
like the ninth immortal.
Yeah, oh, the ninth immortal, yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah. Let's give it to someone while they're still playing. But yeah, outside of Cam Smith and Jonathan Thurston, I don't think there's anyone that's fitting yet that's still playing. There's plenty of people who have potential to get to that point. Someone like a Jason Taumalolo, for sure. Nathan Cleary maybe in 15 to 20 years, yeah, for sure, but long way to go for that yet. I was going to say someone else and now I've forgotten who they were.
Taumalolo is a good one as well, because something else I noticed from this list, all Australians at this point.
Yeah,
so you know, we haven't got any Kiwis or British players in there at this stage, and Taumalolo could potentially be the first one of that, but I guess there's other New Zealand players like Ruben Wiki had like an amazing career. Stacey Jones, maybe.
He's
done a lot for New Zealand rugby, you know. So
and that's like, I think that's something that needs to be factored in as well. I mean, they're not factoring that in though, because they're just going on. And I guess that's the downside to just focusing on playing careers, because you lose all the good stuff that people have done outside of their playing days. Yeah. You know, otherwise Hazmel Masri would probably be in there.
Absolutely, yeah. And I agree, yeah.
So, yeah, so that's the downside to it. But, yeah, I agree. Look, let's have a look at some New Zealand guys, maybe some English guys as well. But, yeah, I think Norm Proven should be the next one there.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I'd like to see Norm get named there. Actually, I don't know a whole lot about his career, but obviously, like, the Proven Summons Award, he's very highly regarded within the rugby league community, which, again, I think is a very important factor. Yep. I know we've already gone through that a million times. And I also think Mal is someone who's pushing for a spot, definitely. Mal and but obviously in the future.
And, I mean, and that's probably a good point as well, is that, well, you didn't really make the point, but I'll make the point, of when do we start to consider coaches for immortality? Someone like a Wayne Bennett. Someone, you know, like a Phil Gould, maybe. And then, obviously, you got to look at Mal, both playing and coaching. He's done it all.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's not many people that even come close to standing up to Mal's achievements as a player and a coach. Mm.
Imagine how many immortals are going to come out of that Queensland team. That team that won, well, you know, what, nine in the row or something like that. There's going to be a few that will come out.
I don't know if there'll be too many. I think Cam Smith and JT.
And Lockyer as well.
Yeah, okay. Lockyer will go close. Yeah, for sure, Lockyer. But, you know, guys like Inglis. I don't think Inglis is an immortal. Fantastic player, but no. It doesn't stand up at the right times, I don't think. I can't think of anyone else from that team.
Yeah.
I mean, there's good players like you. Steve Price is your Matt Scott's, but Billy Slater's. But I don't think they're immortal. Cooper Cronk.
Mm. I think Slater will push, but I don't know if he'll get there.
I think if they named, each year they named a team of the last 10 years or something, that's the kind of list he deserves to be on. I don't know. It's a tough one. I don't know where you draw the line. I guess it depends on how many you induct per year.
Well, that's the thing. Since 1981, what's that like? Yeah. 27 years.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in that time we've had 8 immortals.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Are we gonna speed it up? Are we gonna start like, you know, having a set schedule of when they get named? It'll be a yearly thing, you know, it's
and you gotta look at is is Billy Slater as good if Cam Smith and Cooper Cronk aren't there? Mm. Is Cam Smith as good if Billy Slater and Cooper Cronk aren't there? You look at someone like a Jonathan Thurston. He stood on his own.
Yeah.
He played in a team for a long time of nobodies and was one of the best players in the comp. Andrew Johns for a long time. He didn't have... Look, he had a good team for a while, probably early, later 90s, early 2000s, had a very solid team behind him. But I think for a good chunk of his career, he didn't have that many strong teammates. But when he was there, they could still win any game.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
So I think that's probably the real sign of an immortal.
Maybe they should go down the WWE route with like the WWE Hall of Fame. They can then have a group.
Yeah.
Like, the big three or the...
could. I mean, yeah, maybe that is an option. It's a bit of a novelty, maybe. But
Definitely.
But you look at them. I mean, every year the WWE names new inductees into the Hall of Fame, and they name 5 to 6 to 7 a year.
Mm.
There's no reason to say there only needs to be a couple.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just depends on what your preference is.
Yeah, and how many players are deserving.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, so that ends episode 1 of season 3 of The Golden Point, kicking off the 2018 season of Rugby League. Check us out on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. We're all there and making fantastic tweets and posts and all that sort of stuff.
Tweetering
along the way. Check us out. We'll be back next week. JC.
Future immortal JC. future podcast immortal. Thank you very much.
Well, he'll be telling me a lovely story of Rugby League and I'll be reacting appropriately.
I can't wait to discover what that is because at this point I have zero idea. We're also, we've got a tweet going up that we're looking for any stories. If you guys have any good stories to tell, they don't have to be about the NRL. They don't have to be about the English Super League. It could be about your local group team. It's just rugby league in general. Mm. You got a good rugby league story, got a good story about a person, a game, a match, a club, season, anything, let us know.
Absolutely. All right, we'll see you all next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
You've just listened to The Golden Point. Well done.